KPCW News Time now, 8:12. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, as we reported, the Heber City Council has hired Matt Brower to serve as their new city manager, replacing Mark Anderson, who had served in that position since 1998. Matt Brower joins me now in studio. Good morning and congratulations.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I was born and raised in Salt Lake. I graduated from the University of Utah early in the 90s. I went to Florida and graduated from Florida State with my master's degree. From there, I managed communities in Georgia, Florida, California, and, of course, Utah.
All right. So why did you want this job here?
So having been born and raised in Utah, I was looking forward to coming back. My kids have started coming back to the state. My wife said, we've got to get closer. Grandkids are probably coming soon, and it's time to head back home.
Okay. Any marching orders from the council at this point?
I've got a great council. They give me a lot of runway to get things done. The main priority in the city right now is the bypass road, trying to get most of the traffic, particularly the truck traffic, off the main highway through the downtown area.
Yeah, this is something that's been long before you've got here. Yeah, I mean, we're talking decades already. What is it, I mean, that they're looking for you to do is just to tie up the easements?
That's part of it, is to give it the concerted effort it needs to get it across the finish line. There's more easements that got to be purchased. There's more planning that's got to be done, environmental work that's got to be undertaken. And, of course, once that's all done, we have to do the construction of the Dubai Pass. And once that's done, of course, we have the ability to transform that downtown to an amazing place. It's already a great place. We get to transform it maybe to a more amazing place.
Yeah. So is that a city road as opposed to the state highway?
Or does Utah help you? The main road that goes through the artery or through the heart of downtown is actually a state road, but the idea is it would be converted to a city road so we'd have control over it.
Okay. And then what about the bypass road? Is that then a state highway?
That would be a state highway. That's correct.
Okay. When do you think you'll have, I mean, a lot of moving parts then? Timeline on it?
We're working very closely with UDOT. We're trying to get this project seen as a higher priority with the state. We look at probably 5 to 10 years to have it done.
Great. Anything else that the council has kind of put on your plate at this point?
Council's asked me to look at the airport to see how we can optimize operations, see if we can't enhance the airport, make it truly the asset that it is to our community. Also looking at creating a world-class organization. We have a great staff, a great organization. We want it to be a leading organization where we're looked to for leadership and for ideas.
Yeah. Any experience working with a municipal airport in your previous jobs?
Absolutely. Ocala, Florida, and Lincoln, California.
Both had municipal airports.
Both had municipal airports, general aviation.
All right. And then similar agreements then with like the operators?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right.
Ironically, Ocala's airport, it was known as the horse capital of the world. More horses flew into that airport than people did. If you know anything about Ocala, it's a place where most of the horses that race in the Kentucky Derby are either bred, raised, or trained.
Okay. And in terms of the airport, I mean, certainly a lot of concern that we don't want it bigger, but just what, more efficient?
Well, to me, the airport is an economic jewel. It generates jobs. It generates revenues for the city. And so for me, it's looking at how we can enhance the airport to further create additional jobs, create additional revenues for the city, while being mindful of the locals' interests of trying to keep it small and non-encompassing on the overall area.
Yeah. And it's kind of become Park City's airport. You know, we see, of course, a lot of business there during the Sundance Film Festival. A way to capitalize on that?
That's the beauty of it. People coming to Park City have to first come into Heber. So we've got to find a way to capitalize upon that.
What about large annexation? Sounds like the council's ready to go forward with the annexation of what's known as the Sorensen property there on the northeast side of the Heber Valley.
That's correct. So the city is putting in place the proper ordinances and regulations to ensure when that annexation takes place that it can be done tastefully and appropriately. The city's working very closely with Wasatch County to make sure all those things are in place before the developer comes forward to the city.
Okay. But at this point, it sounds like we're moving forward with that, even though it's been property managed by Wasatch County to now.
Yeah, I fully expect that to be annexed by the city sometime in the next year or so.
Yeah. Why is it a better thing to bring that property into the city limits? I mean, it basically doubling the population of Heber City.
Over time.
There's so much already.
It is a very large area, but you're looking at a 30, 40-year build-out. It's not going to happen overnight. And cities do very well growth. They do very well urban development. And counties are more rural in nature. And so I think the city is better poised to handle that type of development.
Yeah. And in terms of water issues there, I mean, do we have water rights to serve that development?
So the water would be provided by a special service district. It would actually not be provided by the city, but a special service district.
Okay. That residents or property owners would pay?
That is correct.
From that parcel?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So have you noticed at this point anything that needs fixing or new, or, you know, I mean, in terms of reorganization of the staff or anything like that? Or are you still too new?
Still too new. I'm still doing a lot of walking and listening, observing. I've challenged my staff to elevate their game, looking for ways to really improve what we do and how we do it. I want to make sure that our organization over time is seen as one of the best premier organizations in the state of Utah. People are going to look to us for leadership. People look to us for ideas and innovation. Challenge my staff to see if there's ways that we can do things more innovatively, more resourcefully.
Yeah. And it's certainly the chamber's job to market the town. But, I mean, what do you see as Heber City's attributes?
Well, it's interesting. When I applied for Heber and it became public that I was applying, people said, Heber, that's a great place. Almost everyone I talked to in California as well as Utah, Heber has a great reputation of being a small town, rural area with a lot of charm and beauty. And so the goal is, of course, to create an organization that is becoming of that and to further enhance the quality of life that we have there in Heber.
Yeah, but also part of Wasatch County, which I was told is the third fastest growing county in the country.
That's my understanding. That's correct.
So there's definitely some challenges to deal with that.
It's also an opportunity. We have challenging with growth, but the idea is you're not going to stop growth, but you can manage it. You kind of shape it so it's special, it's unique, and it's enduring.
Okay. Well, your last job wasn't without some controversies. Doing a little digging in March, city employees where you came from, Lincoln City, California, had apparently sent an anonymous letter to the council claiming mismanagement. Did that have to play in any part of you deciding to look for a new job?
Not at all. Every organization has employees who have challenges. In this case, I worked very closely with the union to try to solve those. The employees did not want to work with the union. We felt that it was not an issue at that time. The union was not involved, and therefore we did not take any action.
City employee, I guess that went over my head. So city employees are part of a union in California?
Yeah, so Lincoln, California had six unions. And so this particular group was part of a union. They did not contact the union. We didn't have an opportunity to work with the union on this. And so really, in my mind, that was not an issue.
Okay, but again, that didn't have any part of
had
you
none.
Wanting to look for a new job.
Absolutely had none.
Yeah, I mean, when you hear about, you know, and then those are pretty big charges, you know, to say that you're mismanaging a city. I mean, it wasn't just you. I think others were pointed out as well.
Yeah, but no facts came forward. No specific details came forward. It was an anonymous letter. It seems to me if you're serious about making charges, you're going to put your name on it and bring the facts forward. There were no facts, and it was an anonymous letter.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to tell our listeners, Matt?
I'm glad to be here. I'm excited to be back in Utah. I'm a homegrown product of the state of Utah, and it's exciting to be here. I'm excited to make a difference in the city of Heber and look forward to maybe coming back and visiting you again.
Yeah, you've found some housing. I mean, you probably know what a challenge that is.
Indeed it was. Indeed it was. The available stock of housing is not very great, and so it's very difficult to try to find something that meets your budget and, of course, that meets your design for a house.
Yeah, so did you end up buying something or are you still renting?
No, we bought something. We're in the Valley Hills area off of Valley Hills Boulevard.
Great. Okay. Again, well, welcome back.
Thank you.
It's Matt Brower, Heber City's new city manager. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. 8:25 now. Good morning. Well, the Park City Council meeting and work session starting at 4:30 on Thursday in the studio with a rundown of what's to be discussed. Assistant City Manager Matt Dias. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Leslie.
At 4:30, the council is going to talk briefly about strategic code enforcement, one of the goals to educate the public about noise and construction mitigation. Also messaging. So what's the message?
The message here is we think we're making some great progress. City Council has taken a greater interest in this area, at least over the last 24 months, trying to be more responsive to the community. So the building department has responded to that. We are planning to unveil some new technology in this next year, a new online permitting and inspection system, which will allow inspectors and subcontractors to have sort of an iPad in the field and communicate directly with each other. You know, a lot goes on when an inspector is at a property, and so there's going to be accountability on both sides. We think it's going to increase transparency and then allow people kind of in the evening or off hours to be able to submit permits and track permits and do things that they otherwise wouldn't be able to do with conventional window hours. We also have an electronic newsletter that we've been sending out to the industry, letting them know about event impacts and other rule and regulation changes, and we think that's a great kind of benefit in terms of customer service, letting people know ahead of time about what to expect in the next few weeks in terms of the construction season. excuse me. And then finally, you know, it's a balancing act. We've had We have had some trouble, sort of, and there's an issue statewide with staffing in the building departments. The building and trades and construction industry is just so busy right now, and so we are doing everything we can to keep up with the workload, and we're really proud of our guys. But it's a balancing act, you know. It's one of these things in municipal government that you know, one neighbor wants you to be doing more, and another neighbor wants you to be doing less enforcement, and so we're trying to walk that tightrope line.
Okay. At 5:15, the council will discuss the launch of the SCPW, the Summit Community Power Works Challenge website for home energy savings guidance. Is this what the city's $25,000 grant to SCPW is paying for?
That is some of it, indeed. So I think most of the community is aware of our energy goals, and they are very rigorous, and we're very, very committed to achieving them. And one of the components of this is the community side, or the residential side, what we do in our households and how we choose to sort of the paths that we take our lives on. And so we have found what we believe will be a great tool for this. It's a website platform where households and individuals can go in, sign up, you know, probably tell the website a little bit about their households in terms of square footage and the year it was built and other things. And then it will offer you some strategies and some reminders about, you know, irrigation and turning your lights off and what to do with incandescent bulbs versus fluorescent bulbs. And this is one component of achieving our energy goals. The other side of things is the city is working to reduce its carbon footprint, where it sources electricity from. So are the big employers in town. But the other part is this community-wide sort of campaign where every household has to do their part.
So there's some challenge to it? I mean, that people, what, form teams or?
Yeah, that's one idea. So the neat part about the website is it comes with a full slate of incentive programs. And so we will be, over the course of the next 12 and 24 months, running a variety of challenges that have rewards at the end of it. So incentive-based, trying to incentivize people to change their behavior when it comes to how they're using energy. And so through the website, we're able to do that in a really fair and transparent way where we could present a challenge, what the reward would be for, let's say, who reduces their water consumption the most or who reduces their power bill the most, and then reward that individual for it or that household for it.
So is this website ready to roll?
Yes, it's ready to roll. Actually, I logged in when I was reviewing the packet over the weekend, and I think I was the third or fourth person to sign up.
All right. The council will also get an update with regard to the historical archaeology potential of the McPolin farm staff. So what is it that we're doing here?
Yeah, this is a pretty neat one, in my opinion. Staff and an archaeologist from the University of Utah have potentially uncovered some additional remnants of the farm property, and one of them is potentially a root cellar, and they're using infrared technology and all sorts of cool archaeological tools. One is potentially a root cellar. Another is sort of an unknown structure, not sure what the structure would be. And then the other two, funny enough, are actually two outhouses. So what I have learned, and you learn a lot of interesting things when you're in municipal government, and one of them is that outhouses actually have a very high historical value because apparently, you know, 100, 150 years ago, it's where a lot of things were just thrown out in terms of household items and things around the farm or things around the property that they wanted to get rid of and didn't want to just move off into the woods. And so, you know, fast forward 100 years later, when archaeologists find an outhouse, believe it or not, they're very, very excited. And so we think there's an aspect here we could potentially have a historical excavation at the farm and involve the community and the museum and all sorts of partners that want to partake in, you know, figuring out what was happening at the farm 100 years ago. And so there have been a few remnants that have been found already, things like spoons and shoes and other things, and just this little bit of diagnostic that we've been doing, and we're really excited about it. We think it could be a neat community initiative.
Okay. Council, well, so is it just to talk about whether, I mean, sounds like we've already paid to do the
We've done some cursory research, and we've used the infrared technology and some drones and some other things, and then we've been matching that up with old photographs of the farm property. But City Council is technically the property owner, so before we dig any holes or get ahead of ourselves, we're touching in with the property owner, which is City Council, and then also doing it in a public session. So we know that this is a town of historians, and we know how important our history is, and the last thing that we would want to do is get ahead of ourselves and start digging some holes without letting people know.
All right, so have we got money budgeted to do this?
That's a great question. We do have a little bit of money budgeted. However, there are two historical societies. One is a national society and one is a local society in Utah that are so excited about this that we potentially think we may be able to fund something like this all through grant funding because of how interesting it is.
Okay. Also an update on the new golf course maintenance facility to select what you're calling an early contractor. I mean, when does the work actually get started on this?
We're hoping spring. We've got a lot of platting and organizing and design work to do ahead of time. If for your listeners, anyone's built something in this town, you know that there's a pretty rigorous planning design review process. And that's the process that we're going to have to go through first, making sure that the land is subdivided appropriately and treating ourselves the same way we would treat the any member of the public that was developing a property.
Okay. And then on the consent agenda, an agreement for a new tunnel between Park City High School and the LDS Seminary building. How much is this going to cost?
It's going to cost around almost $5 million, and most of that funding is fortunately enough, it's coming from the new sales taxes and through some grant funding. But the rendering, in my opinion, tells 1,000 words. So if the listeners are out there are interested in seeing what it's going to look like, the staff report that the city provided has an actual rendering of the new tunnel. And this would be directly between the parking lot and the seminary building. And really, the rendering tells 1,000 words, in my opinion. And we are looking at potentially construction for the spring season. And this is one of those fast highway projects where they can come in. And it's obviously not going to happen overnight. There's a lot of utilities in that corridor, but where they'll be digging a hole and dropping an existing tunnel. So you're not going to be, disrupting that corridor for months on end. It's actually like an accelerated construction process that they go through.
Yeah, so the city's paying all $5 million?
No, we are there. The regional sales tax that was implemented 2 years ago is a funding source, as well as some grant funding, and then the city will help with that as well. So, obviously we have two corridors in and out of Park City. 248 is arguably our most congested corridor, with the most friction with students and children and people going to the seminary and the high school and the Prospector neighborhood. And given the congestion in that corridor, we want to do everything we can to get that friction out of the way before we implement our accelerated bus lanes and additional enhancement 2 and 3 years from now.
Okay, but no funding from the church or the school district, huh?
Not at the moment.
During the regular session, council will discuss the $48 million bond to purchase Treasure Hill and place a conservation easement on Snow Ranch pastures, also scheduled to make a decision. I mean, what's the decision that they're supposed to make?
Formally, by statute, you have to actually have a resolution. The city council, the governing body, has to resolve to put something on the ballot. And so that official language is in the staff report this week. So this has been a very sensitive issue in the community. So if people are actually interested in seeing the bond language, how it will look on the ballot, it's sort of a mirror image of how it will look on the ballot. But it will ask the community for $48 million general obligation bond if they want to preserve Treasure Hill and the Snow Ranch pastures, or the Armstrong Ranch, as we've been calling it.
Yeah. Is there a lot of discussion on this? The details sound like they've been worked out.
It's a very fine question. I don't think there's going to be a lot of discussion because we have just spent so much time over the last 30 years, but particularly acutely over the last 6 months, and then even more so the last month. Staff has gone to great lengths to sort of provide an in-depth financial analysis about the finances behind this deal, how much money is needed to acquire both, the potential purchase agreements, and we've really run that out in the open session, had a tremendous amount of public feedback. I'd say probably in my 5 years here, this is the issue that we've had the most public feedback about. So tonight is what does the public and what does council think of the bond language itself? Because it can be amended on the fly. They could augment that language this evening. Anything could happen. Obviously, that's not under my purview. That's council's purview. But it's really just to review this language because we've already gone through all the financial aspects of the deal.
Yeah. Some people concerned, the $3 million basically for the Armstrong Ranch, a no-brainer. And so some people concerned, why risk that by combining it with Treasure, which is really an unknown?
No, I think that's a fair question. And that's the question that the city council had been asking for, I'd say, the last 4 or 5 weeks, ever since this Snow Ranch or Armstrong Pastures deal came to light. So they've had several council meetings where they've taken, all sorts of public input. I've been on the radio show before where overwhelmingly the public input was, be bold, be resolute. These are the last two iconic properties in terms of open space that any of us can foresee And that this is really a capstone moment that we can put both of these, we can broaden the initiative, a more conventional open space bond, and sort of go for it. Put them both on here and test the will of the voters. And so I believe that council is just trying to reflect what they've heard in all of this public input, emails, calls. And then, you know, if you've been part of the council meetings, we've spent 30 minutes some evenings taking this type of public input.
Yeah, and certainly, I mean, I've heard the council talk about simplicity. Oh, it's simpler to put two properties on one bond. But I mean, it seems to me simple is, do you want to, you know, $3 million and do you want to pay $45 million? There you actually have a choice. Here it sounds like the Snow Creek Ranch is being, you know, held hostage here.
Yeah, I haven't heard that, but I guess overwhelmingly we just heard put them together and keep it simple. So let me try to do that. So for $48 million, for a $48 million general obligation bond, Park City has the ability to preserve these two properties and prevent them from being developed in perpetuity. So for a $48 million general obligation bond. And we've been on the show before where, you know, for the average household in Park City, that's around $195 a year.
Okay. Let's move on to the special events city service fee reduction recommendations. We're talking about 4th of July, the Big Stars Bright Nights, Tour of Utah, and Miner's Day. Is that all for this year?
It is indeed. And I guess, you know, I'm sympathetic. I also want to make sure I thank all of the individuals that have been working, you know, nights and weekends, and the volunteers and public safety. We had a tremendously successful Kimball Arts Fest and a tremendously successful Tour of Utah. So I want to give everyone a shout out there, because we were running on all cylinders over the last couple of weeks, and it was really amazing to see. But we have before council this evening this item to approve these fee reductions.
Okay. The council has said that they want to lower the amount that the city actually has to waive in fees for special events. So are we going to have that discussion? I mean, at what point do we just say we're not going to offer so many fee waivers?
No, I think you're right. And I don't think that's something that happens overnight. I think so many of these events are either iconic Park City events or have been things that have supported nonprofits in our community for decades. And so I think council has signaled their intent that this is an area they'd like to work on. They'd like to reduce the amount of fees over time, but it's not something that's going to happen overnight, because they don't want to be so disruptive or deprive a nonprofit or another entity with something so abrupt. But I do think this fall you are going to see city staff come back to council with some recommendations about how to either lump these together a little bit more, so you're reviewing several events at the same time, similar to what we've applied here, but maybe even broadened, so you're reviewing 10 events at a time and you're looking at it in totality. And it'll be a little bit easier than sort of the intermittent one-offs where, you know, this nonprofit is really dependent on, and if you were to impact the fee reduction, it's going to have consequences. And so, you know, this is a tightrope walk. Again, I said that before, that council's trying to walk. We know it has impacts. We're sensitive to that. But over time, it is something that we're going to look at. It's more and more expensive to run our transit system. We have additional public safety out there. We have additional need for traffic and congestion mitigation measures. And so it's getting more expensive for the city to support these.
Okay. And council will also consider 950 Iron Horse Drive in as official Sundance venue. Is this the spot, what, next to Rite Aid? Where are we talking about?
Exactly. It's the spot next to Rite Aid. I think it's been vacant for some time, and Sundance is looking for some additional properties. And, you know, there was a little bit of concern about the property itself just being sort of dark throughout the rest of the year. And Sundance was, excuse me, very aware of the whole dark storefronts initiative that the city had undertaken on Main Street with the merchants. And so they're very interested in working with the city and other individuals to repurpose the space when it's not used for Sundance. And so in the staff report that the city has provided, Sundance has stated several different sort of opportunities that they think they can get subtenants in there or additional sublessees to take over that space when it's not used for the festival.
So what's it going to be used for during the festival? Is another screening venue? Or
I don't know if that's been determined yet, and I don't want to speak for Sundance. But I do know it's going to be part of the festival, and then they are committed to repurposing it at other times of the year to ensure that it's not a dark storefront.
Okay, and real quickly, you wanted to mention that we've got some city officials testifying today as part of what?
Yeah, this is a new development. We were talking a little bit earlier about our sustainability goals, and if you're kind of a geek like me and you like the legislative process, at 1:15 today and you go to the state's website for the legislature, you'll be able to hear in audio and in visual Mayor Andy Bierman and County Council Member Glenn Wright and our partners at Rocky Mountain Power, Salt Lake City Mayor Jackie Biskupski, and a council member from Beaver County all talk about an initiative to allow municipalities and customers to source their energy from renewables. And so this is a big deal that the political subdivisions or jurisdictions in the state of Utah are working with our utility to have the ability to purchase your electricity from a renewable source. And so we're going to be, it's an interim committee session. It's at 1:15 today. The audio and video is available on the state's website. But for the community, you know, your mayor and your county council member, you know, are down there doing the good work and trying to make sure that we can meet our sustainability goals.
Okay. Hey, Matt, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
It's Assistant City Manager Matt Dias. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. It's 8:44. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, Park City schools start next Wednesday, August 23rd, but teachers and administrators already back to school. In the studio, before he kicks off his first year at high school, I have the new principal, Roger Arbabi. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So you and your family made the move to Park City when?
We got here 1 month ago. So we just, right, mid-July, we made the move here.
Okay. You found a place to live?
We did, yeah.
Good.
Yeah,
all right.
Absolutely.
And in terms of when you started on the job, was it right then when you got here?
No, or? I started August 1st.
Okay, that's when the contract starts?
Yeah.
Yes. So you've had a chance to meet staff?
I have. We've had opportunities to meet several of the teachers who've been coming in and out of school a little bit early, who are anxious to start. But we've also had opportunities to hang out with a lot of the other administrators and get a feel for the district.
So apparently you attended some team retreat last week in Midway. What was that about?
You know, it was our first opportunity to really get to meet Dr. Gilday. It was an opportunity for us to also know what's happening in the district from all the different directors and meet some of the administrators. It was really a nice opportunity to do some team building.
Yes. So was it the entire staff or just the high school?
It was the entire district.
Okay.
Yeah.
So administrators.
We had the directors there. We had the superintendent, the assistant superintendents, and then all of the administrative staff.
Okay. But not teachers.
No teachers were there.
All right.
No. Teachers start tomorrow. We're really looking forward to them being here.
Okay. So what do you think so far?
You know what? Park City is a dynamic small town. It's incredible. There's a lot happening, a lot of involvement. I've had the opportunity to sit down with Park City Education Fund, and it seems like it's an incredibly generous community. I'm really looking forward to being here.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your priorities for the school year.
You know, I'm coming into a school that is highly, highly functional. Just sitting down and looking at some of the preliminary data that's coming to through. Our AP scores are up, 12, 13% even over the last year, and they were phenomenal then. So I don't really feel the need to come in and reinvent the wheel. We've got some amazing staff that are working there. We really want to just make sure that we have a lot of follow-up, make sure that our school campus is safe, that our students are learning, make sure that we're focusing on good instructional strategies, and we're going to move from there.
Yeah. So what's the biggest part of a principal's job? I mean, it's not really with the students. Is it more with just the staff?
Well, the principal's job is a dynamic job. I mean, first and foremost, you're a instructional leader. So you set the tone for the entire school, and you want to make sure that your students are safe, that they're learning, and you want to make sure that all the special interest groups are also being heard so that everybody has an opportunity for to learn.
Yeah. So. But in terms of the kind of the day-in, day-out part of the job, I mean, where do you spend your time?
Well, ideally in the classrooms. That's going to be a high priority for my administrative staff. I've got an incredible staff, Caleb Vine, Phyllis Suggett and Jamie Weeks and I are going to be spending a lot of time in the classrooms. We're going to be just observing what's happening, just to have a snapshot of what's happening at the school, so then we can actually then fortify our plan moving forward.
So is that, I mean, in terms of just watching how teachers teach?
Teaching how they teach, making sure that the students, really we want to focus, we want to be a student-centered school. So we want to make sure that the students are learning, that they take ownership of the learning, and those things happen when you're able to monitor and be in the classrooms and give feedback to teachers.
Yeah. So who deals with the parents?
Who deals with the parents? Obviously, you know, hopefully if there's issues that happen, it starts with, if it's with the teacher, that they, you know, that it, the teachers have an opportunity to visit with the parents. But, you know, always things escalate and they do come up towards my level. So.
All right. So you guys just draw straws in terms of who's taking who?
Usually I'm the last person that everybody gets to see. So.
Yeah. In terms of the number of students, I mean, are you going to be able to fit them all in?
You know what, Leslie, this is an issue that I talked with Andrew Kaplan about when I was first hired. We're busting at the seams. You know, we've got teachers that are floating. We're looking at where we're going to be putting all of our staff members. And so we're going to be looking at long-range plans to see what we can do to accommodate everybody.
Yeah. I mean, would you prefer to see the ninth graders in the school?
Absolutely. For various reasons. But we're losing instructional time every time a ninth grader comes back and forth on our campus, you know. And I think that I've had an opportunity to speak with various administrators, and that realignment process really, we hope that it is able to happen soon.
Okay. And in terms of just when we talked to you back in March, I think it was, you had been working in Columbia.
Yes.
What do you bring from that experience to Park City?
You know, Leslie, it's one of the things that I learned while I was, well, many things, but one of the things that I really learned is that we need to make sure that our students are global citizens, making sure that they are able to understand differences in social cultures. And I think that by having worked overseas, by having had that experience to work with professionals from all over the world, it really made me realize that this is a small planet and we need to make sure that our students are ready to move forward and get to know the rest of the world. So it's a big challenge for us.
As I recall, you were teaching in an international school, so it was English-based?
It was, it was an American school following the Common Core curriculum, but it was predominantly Colombian students at the school.
Right. So you're bilingual yourself?
Yeah. I mean, I was a Peace Corps volunteer back in the early 90s, and so I was in Ecuador, so I learned Spanish. And then I lived in Texas after that, and then in Colombia, so I've been able to maintain my Spanish.
Sure. So, I mean, with estimates of 25% of our population, school populations speaking Spanish as their native language, how important do you think it is to have you as being able to communicate with them?
I think more importantly than just the language, I think that being able to I really enjoy the Latino culture, and so being able to communicate with the parents and making them feel welcome to come to campus is going to be key. It's something that I've done for a long time. I've worked with the Latino culture, and so I think it's going to be a big plus for us.
Okay. Well, we're kicking off football Friday night.
Friday night, and I would like to invite everybody to come down to Wasatch and join us.
Okay. Yep. Our rivals there, the Wasatch Wafs, and I see you got your Miners shirt on,
so I do.
Go Miners.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything else you'd like to tell our listeners?
You know what? We're really looking forward to having our students on campus. Tomorrow the teachers are going to be there, and we're really looking forward to hitting it.
Okay. Well, thanks for spending some time with us this morning.
I appreciate it.
That's the new principal of Park City High School, Roger Arbabi. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, coming up on Friday, KPCW and Cole Sport once again hosting the Back Alley Bash, a free community celebration that kicks off the station's four-day pledge drive and auction next week. In the studio with details, KPCW General Manager Renee Bodley. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. That was a great interview. And I just want to remind our listeners that Friday night, not only is it the high school football kickoff, But KPCW is also going to be broadcasting that game live. So you can come to the Back Alley Bash and you can be listening to the football game. And that way we can serve everybody.
Okay. And that's actually a little bit of change. We can talk briefly about that, that we're not going to be broadcasting just Park City Minor football games, but we're going to take a look at what, just the entire region?
That's right. We're going to be covering all the high school football games in Summit and Wasatch County. So in our mix of our Friday night broadcasts, Park City High School, North Summit, South Summit, and the Wasatch Wasps. So that is a change for us. Before, it was only Park City High School. We really wanted to reach out to the eastern side of the county, and we also wanted to reach out to Wasatch County. That's, you know, high school football's big everywhere, so we decided to share the love.
Okay. Well, and that's what we'd like to see happen next week as well, reaching out to those areas of the two counties that tune into KPCW for their local news. But let's start with the bash itself. Friday, 5 o'clock, what has the team here got planned?
We've got some great live music. We've got Sin City Soul who are going to be singing for us. We have great food and adult beverages for purchase. And we have children's games as well. It really is a family event. I love the story that David Boyle did on the history of the event. Big thanks to Cole Sport for their big role they play in this. Leslie, they provide a lot of staffing for the event, which is wonderful. That's some behind-the-scenes stuff that I don't think the public really knows, but Cole Sports is a big supporter. The Back Alley Bash really is a great night, and we lucked out this year. To my knowledge, there's no big concerts going on that night, so if you're interested in live music, it looks like the weather's going to be great. Please come by the Town Lift Plaza. It starts at 5:30. It'll be going until 9.
Okay. Again, as you mentioned, live music, food, beverages, everything's free. People have the opportunity, of course, to buy some food. We've got some restaurants, preparing it?
Yeah, we've got the Bridge Cafe. We've got Butcher's. We've got Devonza's. High West is providing some cocktails for us. It's going to be a wonderful event. So if you want pizza, if you want burgers, I think there's going to be something there for everybody. And, great live music. And we do have an opportunity drawing. We are giving away a free, you got to purchase the ticket. We're not giving it away. It's a value of $2,500, Conestoga Ranch, Bear Lake, glamping, some fancy camping. You get to stay in a luxury tent for four people. You get breakfast and dinner. I understand the food up there is really good. It is a three-night package for four people. For a $25 ticket, you win a chance to win that prize. Or you can buy five tickets for $100. You can go online right now, kpcw.org, to buy those tickets, and we will also be selling the tickets at the event.
Okay. Then we kick off the pledge drive Monday morning at 7 a.m. What's the goal this summer?
Raise as much money as we can, as it is every pledge drive. We do depend on the funds we raise during our pledge drives to provide about 25% of our operating budget. Our goal this year, Leslie, is $150,000. We hope to make that in the 4 days, Monday through Thursday. Pledge-free Friday, something we started a couple years ago. It seems to work. We also have our online auction, kpcw.org. Lots of great items there that you can bid on. Got a Traeger grill again this year. That always goes fast. So tune in and dial in and as soon as you can on Monday morning. We've got the transportation packages as well on Monday morning. Also, Leslie, we are asking nonprofits in the area to please come in and talk for an hour about their mission and how KPCW helps them support their mission. We help spread the word about what these great nonprofits are doing. We're going to provide an incentive. The top four nonprofits who get the most money raised, the top four nonprofits who get the most phone calls and unique donations will get free underwriting on KPCW. These are spots, 30-second spots, that normally cost $25 for a nonprofit to put on air. And we're going to give away $10,000 in free underwriting. The number one person in each category, they get 6 months of free underwriting. That's three spots a week. Number two gets two spots a week. Number three gets three spots for 3 months. And number four gets two spots for 3 months. So it's a really great deal. Now, of course, we provide free messaging through our DJ Red PSAs, through our website to all our nonprofits. But this is a way that they can get their messaging out even further.
Okay. And in terms of those who may want to provide an auction item or a premium, is it too late to do that?
Oh, good question. Today is the deadline, so thank you for asking. Please call us at 435-649-9004 or email Jennifer at kpcw.org. If your business wants to put up a thank you gift, if your business wants to donate an item, if you want to donate an item for the auction, today's the day to get it in.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Please tune in. You know, we provide great local news for this area. And if you listen to KPCW, please consider a contribution. We don't ask for subscriptions. We just ask you twice a year to give us some money.
Okay. Great. Hope we have a good turnout on Friday night. And again, get your speed dials ready for the pledge drive starting on Monday morning. Right now, it's 8:58.